Blog Talk Radio.
Five Star Radio presents Mortgage Markets Today, where industry experts discuss capital markets, trading, real estate, lending, and the mortgage servicing industry. For more information on guests of Five Star Radio Mortgage Markets Today and podcasts of previous episodes, visit us at thefivestarradio.com. Five Star Radio is brought to you by iServe Companies. Now your host of Five Star Radio Mortgage Markets Today, Louis Amaya.
Welcome to the podcast. My name is Louis Amaya. Today is September 9th, 2013, and we are broadcasting live at the Five Star Conference in Dallas. We are privileged to have as our guest today Mr. James Lockhart III, Vice Chairman of Wilbur Ross & Company and former Director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Wilbur Ross manages $9 billion of private equity and hedge fund investments, as well as a National Recovery Fund. As Vice Chairman, Mr. Lockhart coordinates Wilbur Ross's investments in financial services firms and mortgages. For the prior 7.5 years, he served in the U.S. government in a series of presidential-appointed, Senate-confirmed positions. He was the Director, CEO, and Chairman of the Oversight Board of Federal Housing Agency, Finance Agency, the regulator of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and 12 federal home loan banks. He was the Director of the Office of Federal Housing Enterprise Oversight, which is now part of FHFA. He was nominated to that position by President George Bush. He also served on the Financial Stability Oversight Board from its inception in 2008. This board was set up to oversee TARP, which is chaired by the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Mr. Lockhart holds an MBA from Harvard University and a BA from Yale University. James Lockhart is up next on Mortgage Markets Today.
Five Star Radio is brought to you by the Five Star Institute. Elect to join us for the 5th Annual Five Star Government Forum this March in Washington, D.C. Leaders in the housing market, top voices in servicing, and esteemed government officials will gather at the famed museum to discuss the issues facing the housing sector. Join us in the Capitol, and your voice will play a critical role as we define the road ahead. Mark your calendars for March 25th, 2014.
Mr. Lockhart, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
I know you don't have a lot of time, so let's just get right into it. QE is a controversial topic. According to Dealogic, volume of debt issued by agencies is at its lowest level year-to-date in 2013. Mr. Ross spoke with Bloomberg a couple of months ago. Let's take a listen, and I'd like to get your comments.
QE is not a permanent phenomenon. It's a temporary phenomenon meant to deal with temporary circumstances. And I think he's right. The right way to do it is gradually slow the purchases so that there's not an immediate shock to the market.
Do you think the industry is ready to hear this?
Yes, I think the industry is. Obviously, they heard it already when you've seen what's happened to mortgage rates. They've already backed up in anticipation of the tapering in QE3. My view is what the Fed has done is it's been extraordinary, and it's been needed through this. Well, now it's almost 5 years, or it is 5 years since the crisis really started. But we need to gradually get the government out of the mortgage space and gradually get it back into the private sector. And one of the ways to do that is to start tapering, but tapering very slowly, QE3.
When you talk about anticipating QE easing, the reality is that Fannie and Freddie are probably, 85% of the market in today's securitization process. What does that look like, and at what levels and at over what period of time does that easing happen?
Well, it's going to take a long time to reduce Freddie and Fannie's and FHA's market share. Combined, they're almost 90%. And we're going to have to build a structure that's more private sector friendly. We're already starting to see in the jumbo space mortgage-backed securities issuances. We have a company, ShellPoint, that's issued in June a jumbo mortgage-backed security, has another one coming up in the not-too-distant future. And Redwood and a whole series of them are starting to do securitizations of jumbos. So that the private sector is coming in, but it's like $70 billion out of a trillion to trillion and a half market. So a long way to go before the private sector can really replace Fannie and Freddie.
One of the positive side effects on increasing interest rates is that some see it as the normalization or the path to normalization of the market. We all know that interest rates were artificially low, primarily as a result of QE, and we've experienced short-term pain on origination as a result. However, do you anticipate credit opening up as a result? Because the banks are going to have to keep originating, keep generating the revenues that they saw in the last few years, I would imagine. We've seen some credit widen, but do you see more? I mean, we've seen some jumbo come back to market, private securitizations. Do you see some non-prime coming back?
Well, I certainly see banks making more mortgages and keeping them on their balance sheet rather than passing them on to Freddie and Fannie. They are looking for assets, at least the healthy community banks, and even the major banks are looking for assets at this point. And if they can get a good quality mortgage, they'll keep it on their balance sheet as long as it's not a 30-year fix. We're seeing some of our banks, and we own five banks around the country, keep up to 15-year fixed-rate mortgages, and certainly they like the jumbos and the adjustable-rate mortgages. So we're gradually seeing the private sector come back, but as I said, it's going to take some time.
So interest rates increasing, is that a positive or a negative for your business, or you've already built that into your planning? I would imagine you'd built it into your planning for some time now.
Well, I think from the bank standpoint, we have a lot of different businesses, but the banks we invest in, over time, higher interest rates are going to help. That will help their spreads on the net interest margin. So over time, I think that's a positive from our standpoint. We have some mortgage originators, and certainly they have seen a dramatic drop in refinancings over the last 4 months. There was a tremendous wave of refis as interest rates got down. You could get, I think I got a 15-year fix at 2.625%. And, you know, mortgage rates are up 100% since 100 basis points since then. And so, you know, we're seeing people that would have refied now pulling back. So we're going to see a lot more of just purchase money mortgages and less refis going forward. So from the originator standpoint, it's not good. From the servicer standpoint, they seem to be doing okay.
Well, I think from a servicing perspective, with interest rates going up, I mean, they're probably jumping for joy, I would imagine, a little bit to see some stabilization within their portfolio. Earlier in the day, we had a session on mortgage servicing rights, and we've seen mortgage servicing rights trading at very low multiples in the last 2 to 3 years. But as a result of the dysfunctional marketplace, it seems that capital rushes to whatever sliver of the industry that where they feel like they can make a return. First it was whole loans, then it was REO. MSRs have been trading well, but now that's starting to get crowded. Are you particularly looking to acquiring MSRs in a big way in the future?
Well, certainly our banks are starting to keep their mortgage servicing rights rather than selling them when they sell the mortgages. We also have a company called Capital Markets Cooperative, which is a group that deals with probably about 80 to 90 smaller banks, mortgage banks around the country. It started out helping banks hedge their 30-year mortgage risk. And in between when they sold them to either one of the big banks or Fannie or Freddie, they are now actually buying mortgage servicing rates. And what they're seeing, yes, the marketplace was very attractive. You know, a year ago, mortgage servicing rights have traded up, but they've traded up for a really good reason. These mortgages that are being created now were created, you know, a few months ago, we may not see mortgage rates like that for a long time, so these mortgages may be there for a long time, and therefore the mortgage servicing rights should be worth a lot more.
When we talk about, you know, Fannie and Freddie, you had just got done with your session, and we did speak a little bit, and how they're trying to get out of the marketplace. I know Obama had favored some initiatives to remove Fannie from the space over a period of time. But the reality, again, like we discussed, they're 80-85% of the market. Where do you see, and you talked a little bit about in your session, but where do you see the alternatives moving in that regard?
Well, we need to look at the whole housing market and what we want it to look like in the next 5 to 10 years. And that's what Congress and the administration should be really doing, is to try and to figure out what we want the mortgage market to look like in the U.S. We are investors in banks outside of the U.S. and Ireland and U.K. So we see more different mortgage markets. One thing that makes us unique is we have a 30-year fixed rate mortgage that's freely prepayable. We also have Fannie and Freddie, they don't have anything like that, and yet they had bigger, in the case of Ireland, much bigger housing bubbles than we did. So I think one of the things we need to think about is going forward, how do we build counter-cyclicality into the mortgage market? In other words, how do we shave those peaks and valleys off so that we don't have the kind of crises that really started a worldwide financial crisis? And that should be the goal of any mortgage reform. Now, when you get to the future of Fannie and Freddie, there seems to be a building consensus, although it's not across the board, that we need to replace them, but that may take 5-10 years. And what to replace them with, there's a real debate. There's a bill in the House that would do away with any government involvement in the mortgage market. There's a bill in the Senate that would, the Corker-Warner bill, that would suggest that we need government involvement, not Fannie and Freddie, but we create an FDIC-like agency. In fact, it's called the FMIC, Federal Mortgage Insurance Corporation. And what that would do is it would insure some mortgage-backed securities, charge mortgage rates that are hopefully risk-adjusted, probably will take 5 years to set that up. The other issue, of course, is Congress is busy in a lot of other things at the moment. Certainly all the budget battles are going on, so it's very unlikely we'll see, even though it's 5 years since we put them into conservatorship, anything in the very near future.
You know, in some of the other countries, actually, I think they have a portable mortgage. But when talking about mortgage servicing rights, one of the unknown risks, and I think this was termed by Donald Rumsfeld when he was talking about Iraq, about the knowns we don't know or the unknowns we don't know or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but some of the risks towards mortgage servicing rights is more government intervention and the concept, well, you know, someone refied at, you know, 2 3/8 or 3 and they're never going to refi again, but they may want to buy a bigger house or they may need to move. Do you ever see a time where the mortgage becomes portable, and does that cause any type of risk? Because I can imagine some type of economic slowdown of people wanting to either not move up or move on simply because rates may be 8 or 9%, and they just don't want to give up that 3% mortgage.
Yeah, that's an interesting animal. It actually makes interest rate risk management even more difficult for the holders of those mortgages. Portable mortgages certainly make some sense from the standpoint that there's not the refinance cost all the time. But I think it, you know, could be a marginal product in this country, but I don't think it would ever be a big product. You know, the banks do like refinancings. It's profitable business. And, you know, if it's portable, it means that, you know, the negative convexity or whatever you want to call the interest rate risk in these mortgages would be worse. So my view is that the providers would find it very expensive to provide portable mortgages, and they would cost more.
Let's move over to real estate. Real estate, you know, we've seen housing values increase double digits again, especially in some areas. We've seen investors come in. We have a lot of professionals within the market in this space right now. And there is some concern of a bubble within a bubble. Let me play you a clip from Dr. Schuller. He was on MSNBC just a couple of days ago, and let me get your thoughts.
You seem reluctantly positive, and you've seen that for a long time. I mean, I almost feel like you want to say, it's not for real.
Well, now this is for real. The housing market has gotten very speculative, and it goes through big cycles. If you look, you know, take California, for example. It's been up and down, decade by decade, and it doesn't go anywhere. It's just a roller coaster. That's the way these markets have become. So for a long-term buyer, the fact that they're going up now doesn't mean a whole lot about where it's going to be when you finally sell.
Robert, we've seen a tremendous number of hedge funds, private equity guys go in, buy a lot of homes, fix them up, and rent them. I just have a feel that is the height of speculation. there's a possibility that those homes will not be able to stay in the hands of private equity, and they're going to dump them, and that could cause the decline?
Absolutely. I think that's the momentum that we've seen historically may be weakening because there are so many more professionals in the market. And it's kind of obvious to me what some of these hedge fund people are thinking. They're thinking it's a market with real momentum and it's going up. And so I can flip something. I can buy it and sell it a year later and it's pretty safe. And I think they might be right. But the problem is that means that the market is going to change.
So as an investor in this space, listening to Dr. Schuller make those comments, causes some concern. I mean, I'm in the business, and we run an REO business. We buy loans, and we're in the space, so we keep a pretty good eye on what's happening. And we do feel some markets are priced up, and that when the institutional investors decide to back out, which some have already are, there may be a gap between traditional buyers, homeowners coming in, and investors backing out primarily because of tight credit. Or the sense that prices are so high and they maybe drop down until traditional buyers come in. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, yes, it has been a hot sector for a while, the REO rental sector that you talk about. And, you know, a lot of capital has rushed in there. We actually, our private equity funds have not. It's a tough business to handle, you know, with all the maintenance and all the other things that go with home ownership. There certainly is a risk that we have in some markets. Obviously, real estate is local. In some markets, they may have bid up the prices too high, and there will be some settling down. And certainly, you know, part of the equation when you're buying a house is what the interest rate is, as well as what the house price is. And certainly, with the 100 basis point plus jump in interest rates, it may mean that some of the marginal buyers are being priced out of the market, so that there is—it's certainly some concern that we will see. I'm not sure it's a concern, but there's some possibility we'll see some slowdown in some markets, which is not all bad. I mean, we don't. It would be nice not to have the roller coaster that he talked about. And you know, one of the things I keep saying about mortgage reform is we got to figure out a way how to shave those peaks and valleys. And but from an REO to rental standpoint, I would think in some markets we may have gone a little too far, and others we have a long way to go.
Do you think some of the larger hedge funds that have really played in this space, as they see what's happening in the space, do you think they are going to have a longer-term vision and continue to hold, or do you think they'll select a certain part of the portfolio to go ahead and flip out?
Well, it depends on the investors. You know, there's sort of a difference in my mind between the private equity investors and the hedge fund investors. And hedge fund investors tend to move much more rapidly, and they very well may dump if they could figure out a way to dump. But it's, you know, it's not like being able to sell one company. You got thousands of houses to sell, so it's not that easy to dump. So from my viewpoint, there will be some that will be more steady capital, but even steady capital is probably a 3 to 5 year hold. And at some point, they're going to want to sell. And, you know, I hope the demand comes back. I think it's already coming back. You know, there's been almost a 5 year hiatus of people waiting to buy houses, staying in apartments, doubling up with their parents, whatever it may be. So I think the demand will start coming back, and we'll start to see some activity there. But the supply could come out in some markets.
Early on, I say 2007, 2008, as we were building our servicing platform, we built our background is risk management. We were one of the few firms that have been started by risk managers versus originators in the space as this new market evolved. And we went to D.C. and we did a lot of lobbying to talk about servicing standards, to talk about high touch. I mean, some of the old methodologies and measurements measured efficiencies, not risk management metrics. So, you know, the whole servicing world was broken for us, and we tried to address that issue. And we spoke to a lot of people, and everybody said, yeah, you know, it's a great idea. We need to do this. But the reality, moving these portfolios or changing the behemoth of this industry seems impossible. And what we're seeing now today is again, the aggregation of the large of loans gravitating to the large companies. and the smaller special servicers, the high-touch servicers, who really should be touching some of these loans are not getting the chance. What's your view on the future of servicing? Is servicing a good business? And do you think the little guys are getting squeezed out with increased regulation?
Well, servicing is a good business. We invested in it in 07, I guess it was, a big American Home, which was renamed Homeward. We actually did sell it at the end of last year, and we still think it's a good business. We took some stock from the buyer, Ocwen, which has done very well, I might add. It is a tough business, though. I mean, there's two pieces of it. The conforming conventional stuff, you get your 25 basis points, and it can be very, very profitable as long as there's not a problem. But once there's a problem, it's not profitable at all. And a lot of the big banks were not ready for the problems. And so we had the need. That's why, there was some, it became such a messy process. That's why the state attorney generals went after the big banks. And they weren't doing it properly. There's no doubt. I agree with you there entirely. The special servicers really have a good role to play, but even some of them were doing it pretty poorly. The robo signing and some of the other issues we heard about two or three years ago. The business itself is good. From our standpoint, we're looking at potentially some of our portfolio companies are looking at buying servicers at this point, and we'll continue to do so.
So that kind of leads into my next question. We've seen this market as a somewhat dysfunctional, although there's been opportunities that have where certain sectors have functioned for a time being. But it makes planning very difficult, it seems, because the what you would normally think would be a normal response to conditions sometimes either borrowers behave abnormally. We saw that when we were trying to buy whole loans. How do you model and borrow behavior when they're acting completely different than they did, 15 years ago? And even to servicer behavior as far as interest pass-throughs and how they're holding a certain amount of cash from the investors as a result of the portfolio. Where do you see yourselves focusing? I know you guys are a broad, large company, but in general, what do you see the bright spots over the next few years for you guys?
Well, certainly in the U.S., one of the things we're concentrating in is rolling up community banks. And they are in their communities. They're making the mortgages to people they know. And they're servicing the mortgages themselves. And I think that's a good segment and sector that we've been very involved in. In the mortgage space, we're involved in several originators, and we're trying to build them. We're going through this cycle at the moment where refis are not happening in any big numbers, and that means you have to do some downsizing. But we think that may be a buying opportunity to build our service, our originating capability. And our originators are also looking at buying servicing. Our servicer created an originator, and now some of our originators are looking at buying servicers. So we think there's opportunities there. We're also, looking a lot in Europe at this point, because we tend to be looking at sectors that are in distress or some sort of dislocation. Now that the U.S. is coming through some of that, hopefully, we've moved more to Europe where there's more problems in the mortgage markets, and so we're spending some time with European banks and special servicers and non-performing asset players. We historically bought, I think maybe it was 6 non-performing loan portfolios or residential mortgages, and I agree with you. They were tough things to manage with all the regulatory, all the legal cases, the judicial states. It can be a messy industry unless you have the right systems and the right people.
I completely agree with you on that. I know China has expressed, or we've seen some reports coming out of China of their real estate bubble. Increased non-performing loans, and I think I read somewhere that they're trying to develop a secondary market to trade NPLs. You guys ever thought about in Asia or specifically China?
We have been active players in private equity in China. We have textile companies there, auto parts companies, and also we have a clean energy fund in China. But we have, and from the financial services side, we have just found it's a pretty opaque market. It's hard to play for a foreigner. We, from time to time, we talk to Chinese banks. We work with some of the biggest Chinese investors. But we have just not felt that we have the expertise to do it in that market. The bankruptcy laws and all that are more complicated than, say, in the UK or Ireland. So from our standpoint, it's something we will look at from time to time, but we certainly haven't pulled the trigger yet.
We are just about out of time, but I wanted to get one last question in, and it's the question I always ask at the end of the interview. Any forecast or any predictions over the next 12-month period of something that you – predict or you may think may transition in a certain way?
Well, from our standpoint in this market, my view is that we're just going to slowly see some improvement. We're not going to see any great revelations out of Congress helping decide the future of Fannie and Freddie. And we could perhaps have a very ugly fall in Congress as they look at the continuing resolution, they look at the budget for next year. So we could be looking for some mess that might overflow to the markets in the next 2 or 3 months.
Very, very interesting. Mr. Lockhart, thank you so much for joining the program. I know you're very busy and you have a very busy schedule today here at the Five Star, so I thank you again so much.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed the conversation.
That wraps up today's broadcast with James Lockhart live here at the Five Star Conference at the Investor Symposium. Thanks for joining. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, as well as Facebook. We will talk to you next time. We actually...